tapestry weaves together the threads of our struggles and doubts, curiosities, our faith, our joys and hopes, to create meaningful conversations that matter. You know those late night conversations that go unexpectedly deep? That's what we want to capture with the Tapestry Podcast. And we want everyone to jump in the conversation. Because when we are heard and valued, we can begin to believe we are loved. Welcome to the Tapestry Podcast. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Tapestry Podcast. I'm here with my friends, Wongi and Haley. Say hi, guys.
Howdy, howdy.
What's up?
And we're talking today about nostalgia. And this is so interesting to me because I've always felt like nostalgia is kind of a good thing, right? Like you look back and you're like, oh, like remember those stuffed animals or that cartoon show or whatever it was. I've always felt like a good thing. But today we're kind of talking about some of the downsides of nostalgia. So we're going to start by talking about what it is and then move on in this episode to talking about what's so powerful about it, why it's such a strong influence in our lives. So I guess I'll start with you guys. Like, what are some basic kind of intro thoughts on nostalgia for you guys? Or do you feel it? Is it something that grabs a hold of you?
I mean, yes. I'm younger, so there's less to be nostalgic
about. And you have a Disneyland resort trip,
I know,
by
I
the
do
way.
Have a so, Disney like,
you literally have. Yeah.
Oopsies.
Perfect shirt.
That's funny. Yeah, I do have a Disneyland shirt on. And they make bank on that.
Yeah.
So hard. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's so many adults at Disney. We went, funny enough, like, I got the shirt because Maddie and I went to, Maddie is my girlfriend. We went to Disneyland for their like Valentine's Day, like Sweethearts Night. They have these after hours events that are like adults only. Hmm. And
I've
so
heard of this. Yeah.
It's very Disney adult. We wouldn't fall into that category of like hardcore Disney adults, I don't think. And it was very fun. But at the same time, it's like, man, there were moments where I was like, I am an adult in a children's park.
What is
park.
Disney adult? Can you define that? I know adult, I know Disney, but
so
how
there's
two
it's the it's
together?
Like the adults who make like Disney like a very, very prominent part of their personality. Like more than just like liking Disney or appreciating Disney, it's like obsessive. It's and it has
it,
a lot
cosplay-ish?
Of
cosplayish.
No, because I wouldn't
it's a
say
fandom.
That, like,
yeah.
It's so awesome.
Yes.
Okay. Better
it's
word.
Like,
okay.
It's like, and it very much is associated with like the parks too. Like mm-hmm. adults
yeah, yeah.
who like don't always bring, like who forget it's for children is kind of the idea. Like, but strangely
or they're reliving
enough, like,
a childhood or yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to explain. Like this is a generational thing, I guess. Like that's like a term that I feel like I innately understand. But there's, this demographic of adults that attend Disney is actually like changing how they market and like they mm-hmm. sell out these event nights. Like I guess it used to not be super popular and then like some people on TikTok like blew it up and like Disney adults are kind of like giving Disney more money than like when they were just like a kid's theme park. Not that Disney has ever like done poorly ever. Mm. But there's like, adults are kind of, granted, adults have always funded Disney, so I don't really know how to explain it other than...
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
Adults who are making it for them and them only, almost.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's
but it's got to be connected to their childhood, right? That's got to be a nostalgia thing.
There's probably some crazy BuzzFeed article about it somewhere.
For sure.
But...
Top 10 adult things to do at Disneyland, right? Like, probably. Yeah, no, I think, you know, as we pick on Disney, like, I think that's the thing, Mike, from a nostalgia perspective, right? It's not like, right, Haley and Maddie were like, wow, Disneyland is where I was, like, bullied. So let me go there, right? We tend to seek the good memories, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of Disney maybe like, I went there as a kid, or I like this movie, or I like this character, or anytime I go, I always have this euphoria, right? It's always good. So that's what we seek, and then therefore maybe the opposite of that, if it's like places you don't like, you're not going to visit them, right? You really are going to just push them in the back of your memory. Or if you do have to visit them by force, maybe you have to drive by your high school that you hated in your high school days.
Yeah.
You know, but you're never like, oh, let me go back to the reunion, right? You're never going to, neither would you say you want to, neither would you look forward to it, right? So from a nostalgic perspective, right, it, to me, it's skews to the positive, and then therefore we amplify the positive, and that may then skew how we think about the past, or we may reframe the past around what we think was positive because we're hiding maybe some of the other memories, right?
Yeah, and that's the power of the rose-tinted glasses, right? That's the phrase that people use when they're talking about idealizing the past is, you know, oh, they're wearing rose-tinted glasses, or, oh, you got to take off those rose-tinted glasses. I do the same thing. I tend to, like, when it's time to clean out a closet or an old box of something, I have a hard time. Like, you got to throw stuff away eventually, right? You have to get rid of it.
Yeah. I hold on to everything.
Yeah, and I tend to be a hold on to everything. My wife, Heidi.
Hi, Heidi.
She is not the kind of person who necessarily holds on to that. She is a scrapbooker. She loves scrapbooking. But like, I go through these old things and I'm like, I have to be in a certain mood where I can resist the nostalgia and be like, this is not a thing that's meaningful enough for me to hold on to. It is going to the thrift store, or it is going to the landfill, or whatever. We're getting recycled. And I have to be in a certain mood because I will lean toward that nostalgia. And like you said, I mean, yeah, tend to like dwell in the good memories or the stuff that feels positive. Sometimes the, like the hard stuff or the, like stuff that feels heavier sneaks in as well. But yeah, typically with nostalgia, you're looking back on the good times. I mean, like a lot of the songs, right? Like think of like country songs even. Not, I don't think any of the three of us are big into country, but you know, you hear these and it's like idealizing the past, thinking about, you know, the good time on the country road or whatever it is, the dirt roads and the pickup trucks. But I mean, we all do it. And one, I think, really great example is when people who live in places where it snows talk about how it used to snow. Now, it is definitely, the climate is different than it was. I'm not I'm not saying anything about that. I think we have fewer snowy days. But when we look back, we tend to say, oh yeah, when I was a kid, we were sledding every day during every winter. And if you go back and look at the actual weather from those years, you had like two snowfalls, right? And one of them was good for sledding. But you compact it, you conflate all these together, and you imagine that it was back to back to back to sledding all the time and always having fun in the snow. When really, that's not how it is. But that's what we do. We look back and we see things differently than they really were.
Back to what you were talking about at the very beginning of that, Mike, because we're similar in that sentimentality of holding on to stuff. I've never even thought about that as nostalgia. Like I've always, because I've always described myself as just like really sentimental. Like I hold on to birthday cards. I hold on to like, I just hold on to stuff for a long time. And so I've never even thought about that as like being a nostalgic feeling. Partially, I don't go back through it super often. But when I do and I'm like holding on to it and saying like, do I need to keep this? Do I need to toss it? Like I have never ever considered that to be nostalgia until right now. And that's like kind of a crazy little revelation, I guess, for me. Like, cause I've always just thought about it in terms of like sentimentality and not necessarily that it feels nostalgic. Cause like, I don't know how to, cause I'm not like,
they're not exactly the same, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not sure exactly what the differences are.
I couldn't articulate the difference right now. Mwangi, you think you could?
I don't know. It reminds me of this story. I was working in a bagel shop in New Jersey, and this guy from Blue Note Records, because Jersey's close to New York, used to come once in a while. And, you know, I'm checking him out. I'm like, oh, you work for Blue Note, of course. If you don't know, Blue Note Records is pretty much the premier jazz record of all time. Yeah. You could Google it, et cetera. And so I said, hey, you know, we're talking about music. And I was like, man, like, yeah, like the 60s and 70s, they were just like burning when it came to music. And he said, well, he said, you're listening to Blue Note Records now. But he said there was a lot of trash back then too. Right? Because we started, because talking about Jimi Hendrix or whatever. His point was, 40 years later, what you look up and Google about the 60s and 70s music has been filtered to the good stuff.
Yep.
You actually don't have access to the trash. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in essence, like too, maybe as we look at, to your point, Haley, you have all these birthday cards, right?
Yes.
Which ones are trash? I don't want, right? Which ones are like, right? Which ones are the ones that are going to be like classics?
What's
and then which ones are the ones you're like, this will be forgotten, right? Mm-hmm. So like that's part of the, maybe like the detoxing on stuff, right? We say like, it's yes, it's important to me, right? But is it a classic? Like if I showed somebody else this thing, would they have the same reaction? Maybe, maybe not, right? And so like that dude taught me about like, okay, so what does that mean around me understanding nostalgically how those times were, right?
Yeah.
But also knowing that because I'm not of that time, therefore what I know of that time today has been filtered negatively or positively, right? And that what I'm consuming isn't wrong, but it is a partial view of what occurred at that time.
Sure.
Right?
Man, that is such a good example. Music or movies or kind of any pop culture, you know, people look back and like now I know a lot of like the teenagers that I work with love 90s rock, like 90s grunge, all that stuff. Oh, yeah, yeah. They're super into it. And I think you say the same thing about like, say movies from the 80s, where like, oh, movies were so good in the 80s. No, some movies were good in the 80s.
Right.
And the ones that have survived until now were good.
Yeah.
The ones that survive are good.
Mm-hmm.
You're totally missing all the trash. Exactly what you said. I was watching Knight Rider. It's like an 80s TV show about a guy with a car that talks. Mm-hmm. And it sounds ridiculous, but it was amazing. You guys, such a good show.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
But I was watching like an episode because it was on Netflix or something. And I was like, oh, this actually, like part of this episode is good. Most of it is not. And there's this whole long driving scene where he's just driving the car along the California coast. And there's this song that's playing. And the song is not good. Like it was on national TV. It was a bad song. And I was like, okay, which producer's niece wrote this song? You know, like it was bad. But so we don't think of that. When we think of 80s music, we think of the hits.
Yeah, correct.
And all the other stuff is gone. And that's what nostalgia is. Like that's a microcosm of how powerful nostalgia is. Because we're only seeing what rose to the level of survival amidst all the other stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what keeps a hold of us. And so we look back and we think, oh man, the music in the 60s and 70s, the jazz in the 60s and 70s was so good. Yeah. The stuff that survived is really good.
Of course.
Because it's
a survival bias, right? That's the point. It's a survivorship bias. Where, right, so if you're not familiar with the idea of survival bias, it's like, let's say you're doing a study on cancer patients, and you go to a hospital to interview cancer patients, and you say, well, okay, I'll interview the cancer patients to see what the experience was. It's a survival bias because you get to interview the people who are alive.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot interview the people who are dead, right? So this idea of survival bias has to do with this, if you're going out to seek information, yes, you get confirmation or you can learn from the people who were there. You can learn from the people who survived the Titanic, but you cannot learn from the people who died from the
survivorship
Titanic.
Survivorship bias, I don't know if you know this, but it came from either World War I or World War II planes is when it got figured out in that our planes were getting torn up, obviously. And so when the planes came back, they were like, okay, we need to figure out why our planes are going down, where we can armor, what's better. So they were analyzing the planes that came back. And so there were the like patterns on the planes of where the bullet holes went through and like people came back. And I can't remember exactly, so some history buff is going to listen to this and be like, you're wrong. But the idea is if they armored up those spots, the planes would still come back, but the problem is that the numbers wouldn't change. This is not historically accurate anymore, but I'm now explaining the bias.
That, the basic idea, yeah.
That those are the planes that survived, so those are not the spots that need to be armored.
Yeah,
so correct. Yeah, it's just,
bullets,
just
the they have to study the failures instead of the successes.
Yeah.
Which is what we're saying about music, about movies, about all those things, which is interesting if we're talking about media in specifically, because right until like right now, we're in this age of media where there is a ton of it. It's easy to consume. It's easy to make. Specifically, music is easy to make. Movies, TV is still the same type of gatekeeping. That's actually getting harder for those industry professionals, but that's a whole other thing. But music in particular is incredibly easy to make and put out to an audience. And so I always wonder what's going to become nostalgic of right now when there is so much of it. And we still don't know the longevity of how things are going to survive in a digital age. Like the percentage of media now that has like a physical copy is going to be exponentially lower than anything from the 60s or the 70s. Even the stuff that survived that, right? There's so much lost media from that time, obviously. But like how much of right now is going to survive in a digital age without a physical copy?
So I gotta ask you guys a question since we're talking about music, right? So like one of my pet peeves is around social media, this idea to me, that when people are posting photos, essentially, sorry for the exaggeration, maybe they're taking like 50 photos before they post the one that's good.
Yeah.
Is that any different from a studio musician going in a studio and taking 50 takes?
50 takes.
And then recording the one that's good? I'm asking, right? So, right, because my beef is with this social media thing where people are taking so many photos and saying, oh, this is reality, right? But is... You guys are both musicians. Is that the same thing as somebody going in a studio and taking 50 takes and saying like, oh, that's take 25. That's me. Cut it.
Are you saying, so when you say, is it the same thing? Are you saying that music has a different expectation and that in music it's fine?
This is the only thing I can think of. I mean,
are we both saying that they're produced products?
There you go. Maybe from a produced products perspective. And it's tied to nostalgia because my point is that sometimes the way we portray nostalgia is perfection, right? These were the perfect times. And so is the way we produce some of this material essentially biasing the future nostalgia, right? So if me and Haley cut a record today, how does that influence somebody in the future around how they think about what today looks like, right? Versus, for the audience, I'm biased with jazz records. Some jazz records, which you'll see is something called like take one, take two, take three, take four, five, right? Essentially, they record the same song multiple times. Mm-hmm. And what's awesome for the listener is to hear the interpretation of the same song by those same musicians and how different it sounds, right? Yeah. Versus typical recordings, what they'll do is take the best of 10 and say, cut it, right? That's on the record. So again, I've talked for a while. I'm asking both of you guys to say, I have this maybe wrong perception in social media around perfection in production of videos and photos. Am I being biased? Because in reality, when we produce music or maybe other things, we are doing the same thing and producing the best of many takes, and therefore influencing nostalgia and or what is real.
Go for it, Haley.
I feel like the difference is that we already expected that of music, right? So when I listen to a song, and I've been in studios, right? That's very familiar. So I've sat in mixing sessions where you're playing A and B, like vocal tracks, like of the same four words to try to hear a slight difference. It's horrible to do that. I hate doing that. But it's a very real thing. And so we expect that when we listen to music, we expect them to choose what's good. So even to the point, like when you hear something strange in music nowadays, like You're like, how did that get through almost? Yeah. Even though to me, like, I love human pieces and music, but when it comes to social media and stuff, that's still a very new, like, air quote process, I guess, where it's like, it started more authentic, right? And then as it progressed, people were able to make money or, you know, the dopamine you get of a like, of a follower, whatever. And the company's honed in on that addiction. Like, I think part of that is where there's almost a piece where it's like, we don't expect that from social media, but we all know that's what's like the rule.
Why
are you, Mike?
I think something similar is at work, right? Yeah, like I agree with Haley. We expect that a studio album is highly produced and they did a bunch of takes. If you found out the same thing about like a live album, you might feel a little bit like cheated or deceived.
Live album is a good example.
I think social media may have at one point felt a little more raw, but I think people always chose what they were going to share, right? There's a little bit of a mask. I've called it in the past like a digital mask that we put on. It's not our true selves. I think that probably always will be true. It's just now we kind of expect it. Like for me, the way I post on social media is it's almost exclusively like outdoor stuff where I'm like skiing or biking or with my dogs or whatever. Not completely, but a lot of it is. That's what I choose to share because that's kind of what I want to put out into the world. Not because I expect anyone thinks it's a whole picture of who I am. And I think maybe it's kind of similar with nostalgia, except that we don't realize that when we're looking back, we're not seeing the whole picture, right? It's still it's curated in some way, whether it's like almost accidentally by our subconscious or by some maybe not quite intentional force of culture that filters out the bad and leaves what we like the best. But that's why it's so powerful, right? Is because then we look at the thing and we think that it was something that it wasn't. It never was. And so when you look at me, you might think that I'm outdoors every single day doing like crazy epic things. I'm outdoors most days doing something that's like mildly interesting, but it's not like the epic mountain adventures every single day. If you only looked at my feed, you would think that that's all I ever do. And it's not true. But it's also the same thing when we look back at the 1800s or the 1950s or, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it is. We look back and we think, oh man, if we could go back to that time, things would be so much better. But we're missing something really important. We're not seeing the whole picture.
So I'm going to ask a theological Mike, how does that play into spirituality, right? How do we look at maybe some of our spiritual books or theology and do the same thing with nostalgia, right? These were the days, right? These were the times. So not only is it about these were the times, it's about we need to bring these times back, right? Because if the idea is that we have this filter on what was, and then we want to resurrect what was now, we don't have the full picture, right?
Yeah. I mean, we can talk about church history. We can talk about kind of spirituality more broadly. We're going to definitely talk about that in not this next episode, but the one after that in more depth. But just to kind of brush on it, I'll take something from Father Richard Rohr. He's a Catholic thinker, a Catholic like spiritual badass. He talks about, this is a quote from him. He says, I've got it written down. It says, religions tend to idealize and protect the status quo or the supposedly wonderful past. Yet what we now recognize is how often they focus on protecting their own power and privilege. God does not need our protecting. We often worship old things as substitutes for eternal things. I love that. We worship old things as substitutes for eternal things.
Mind blown.
Mic drop.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So
did you have that off the dome, Mike, or did you have that? Were you reading that just now?
I set him up, Haley. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, you delivered.
Yeah. No, I actually have Richard Rohr in this ear right
in
now.
He was
feeding it to me. Yeah. No, we're not friends. I would love to be, though. Man, I've never met him. What a guy.
He can be a listener. He can subscribe. Right?
Oh, yeah. Father Richard, please. It'd be amazing. We're getting close to our time, and I think that may be a really good spot to transition. Yes. Any kind of final thoughts on the power of nostalgia in our lives as we think about moving on to the next
Other episode? Than our sentimentality, I think it'd be kind of interesting to name something we're all nostalgic of. And if we have the time, something we might expect ourselves to be nostalgic for later.
Ooh, yeah.
You're deep, Haley.
Thank you.
So easy for me on the first one. My family did a lot of great summer vacations. We got time off, but we didn't have a whole lot of money to spend on it. So it wasn't big fancy vacations. It was camping. We spent like 4 to 6 weeks camping every summer. And so I idealize those times. I'm sure that like what I don't remember is all the mosquito bites. Like I don't think about all of the like rainstorms that meant that we couldn't do the thing that we hoped to do. I remember all these, you know, amazing adventures. So that one's easy. I think of these family vacations with my brother, with our dog, my mom and dad. We'd meet up with our cousins. It was awesome. And then I think it's really hard. The second ask, like what's happening now that I'll be nostalgic about, as I look back, come back to me on that one.
Okay. I think or do you want me to go? Or do you want to go, Mwangi?
No, you go ahead.
Okay. Something nostalgic for me is I just had it and then I forgot. I went between two. That's why. When I was a kid, and mostly almost all the way through high school, my grandparents lived in Colorado. And so like my dad's whole side of the family lived in Colorado. And so we would see each other like once a month, which I didn't know as a kid is like pretty like rare for a lot of people to see like their cousins and their grandparents that often. And to have everybody so close was very nice. And then my grandparents, when I was in high school, had to move to Arizona to get to a lower elevation health things. So, I'm already nostalgic for like Christmas comes around and I'm like, oh, I remember like all of us being in the house every year, or like birthdays come around and I like remember that kind of stuff. So, that's what I'm nostalgic for now a lot of times. What I expect to be nostalgic for, probably the job I'm at. Honestly, I'm not sure how long I'll be in it or how sustainable that will be, but, it's good. Actually, so the pastor that I work with, she is leaving. She's leaving parish ministry to do chaplainship. And so, she's leaving in July. And I like, we're already in that process of like getting ready to miss her. Cause she has created a really closely bonded staff and like I'm pretty close with her. I'll probably be nostalgic about that. Not too far from now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not about the job. It's about the experience, right? The job places you there.
Sure.
But the nostalgia is going to be around like, the setting.
Being
the
so
people,
close
right?
with people, being the little freedoms it gives me. Yeah.
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 How about you, Mwangi?
I'm going to answer it with what I call nostalgia correction, in the sense that, Haley, you talked about maybe looking back and saying like, oh, these were the memories. I think as an adult, you may correct and say like, yes, I was a kid then, but holy, where are this other stuff going on, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's like, yes, it was a good time, but like now as an adult, you realize way more things, right? You're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
In that situation, this made sense or this didn't make sense, right? And so it's nostalgic, but it's a nostalgic correction or calibration around like, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Yes, as a kid, I thought that was awesome.
Mm.
Now, as an adult, as I look back to that situation, I have a different view.
Mm-hmm. So
interesting.
So, what are you nostalgic about, Mwangi?
Can we talk about the next episode?
What was awesome when you were a kid?
You know, to me, what was awesome, you know, when I was a kid was just like, you know, like whatever I called freedom, right? And that was calibrated against other kids, like anything, like any kid. You're like, well, this other, their parents let them, whatever, right? Uh-huh. Right. So, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like, as a kid, you're like, wait a minute, I'm being wrong because I don't get to do X, Y, Z, right?
Yeah.
But then it's, as an adult, you may be like, well, yeah, like that wasn't a bad decision because, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not about you as a kid not, it's a kid perspective and it's not wrong.
Right.
But over time, now because as you become an adult, now you start to see adults' perspectives, right? Right or wrong?
Yeah.
I'm not saying adults are right, right? I'm just saying, like, you start to see that dynamic, and then you nostalgically you say, okay, I get it or I don't get it, things like that.
Yeah.
So, like you guys at like family gatherings, et cetera, right? I know this is like my son and I were chatting the other day, and he's like, Dad, when's the first time you ever drank alcohol or tasted it, right? And I was like, well, I was like, how do I answer this question, right? Because I remember I was probably like 8 or 9, right? And then my dad gives me like a sip of like Johnny, you know, John Walker, and I'm like, this is horrible. Like, why do you guys drink this, right? And so then I'm like, oh, circle back. Like it's a nostalgia thing, right? So now he's like asking me like, so like, when did you get to taste the alcohol, and what did you feel, and why do you drink alcohol, and all these other things.
Yeah.
My point there is like, it's a calibration, and I say like, well, so would I do the same thing, right? You know, like, what does that mean? And what is curiosity as a kid, me back then? And then was that responsible for me to be given a sip of John Walker when I'm like 8 years old? Like, what does that mean? And here's the thing. The answer to that question will differ from culture to culture.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's true.
Right?
And family to family, too.
Yeah. I can't answer the second question, and I think it's my dogs. I've got 3 of them right now, and they're awesome, and love hanging out with them, and they're super adorable. And also, one of them just ate like 2 pairs of my expensive merino wool socks. You know what I mean? Like, that part I'm not going to remember, right? I'm going to look back and be like, man, what a great time when all 3 of them were together, because, you know, like, one of them is going to pass away first and all that. And it'll be nostalgic, and I'll forget the deep, deep frustrations of dog ownership in those moments.
My dog in my parents' house is 15 years old, so.
Yep, snowball.
That's going to happen. Oh, you just hit me, Mike.
Super chill.
Yeah.
Dog, sorry. By the way.
Oh.
Great dog. So let us then wrap this one up. Thanks for this talk about nostalgia, guys. Next episode, we're going to be talking about, like, what's wrong with it? Like, what are some of the downsides of nostalgia? So we'll get into that next.
Bye.
Peace out.
Bye, everybody. Peace.
The Tapestry Podcast is produced by Stephen Bailey. Original music was scored by Taylor Martin. Our hosts are Haley Bird, Wangi Ndonga, and me, Mike Orr. Special thanks to Lauren Richmond Jr. and Resonate Media. You can learn more about Tapestry and join the conversation on our Discord channel at tapestrytalk.org. Thanks for joining us.